Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Look at this. Look at this. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. A sunny morning that you could only enjoy here along the Gulf Coast. It's been very interesting these past few days. If you look at the weather, we've had, there have been really basically days on end when the temperature didn't get below 80 degrees. It could be pretty stifling at about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. That's when you really feel it, more than in the day. You really feel it at night because the dew points are more important than relative humidity, we might add. If you really want to understand what's going on out there, understand what the dew points mean to you. And the dew points are above 80. And that means that at about 80 degrees, water just condenses and falls out of the air. The temperature is 85 degrees. When the dew point and the temperature at 8 o'clock at night are that close, that didn't happen during the day. They're not quite like that. Boy, that can be stifling. Here's the interesting thing. So I've been thinking about it. It's showing up in your garden in ways that you don't appreciate. I'm going to say something here. There are people who are anticipating climate change, who would like in some ways for climate to change. They think it's going to be a cool thing. It's going to be a neat thing. Not a cool thing, but a neat thing. Things are going to get warmer. You're going to have palms in Minnesota. I hate to disappoint them. Here's the interesting thing. It's not that climate won't change. It will, I guarantee. It is. It has. In my short lifetime, it has. It's really quite dramatic in many ways. But here's the interesting thing about this thing. And this is something that people in Mobile, only people along the Gulf Coast, really can understand. It's not so much what's going to happen with these daytime temperatures. It's what's going to happen with these nighttime temperatures that are going to be really big. It's already happened to us. It's been happening for a long time. We have very high night temperatures, and that changes a lot of things. It changes the way you think about things. It changes the way you build your house. You know, if you're out in Arizona, and the daytime temperatures might get really high, but usually the nighttime temperatures are going to drop off pretty considerably. They're going to be 20, 30 degrees lower than the daytime temperatures, and they're going to be lower because there's no humidity in the air, because the dew point is so low that it won't hold on to temperature once the sun drops down. So the temperature drops. So if you're going to build a house out there, what you'd do is, for example, just let's talk about houses for a minute. What you'd do out there is you'd want a lot of mass, a lot of stone and brick and concrete and asp and whatever else you can put into that house, so that it can store, so that it takes a long time for the house to transition from being cool to being hot. And it works really well. It works really well out there, I'm told. But if you do that here, there is no cooling period when all of that mass can cool off and release its heat to the night, because the daytime temperatures are as hot as the nighttime temperatures. So in Japan, for example, people have long ago realized that they're kind of special, like we are. Their humidity is high. So when they build houses, they don't build houses with lots of mass. They build houses that have rather thin walls, so that the heat from the house is released fairly easily. Thinking about where you are, thinking about how to do that. You know, bricks are that kind of mass, and I'm not sure that a brick house is the smartest thing to do in this climate for a lot of different reasons. It causes a lot of problems, particularly with the dew point, things we don't think about. But it's true in your garden in a big way, because you got to think about what's happening there with these high night temperatures. You want to know what's happening? Go out and look at your garden. How many tomatoes did you pick this week? How many beans did you pick this week? it's getting harder and harder. How much squash did you pick this week? It's getting harder and harder to pick those kinds of plants because they grew up in places where nighttime temperatures dropped. And so they expect these nighttime temperatures to drop, and they can breathe easier. The flowers won't even pollinate when temperatures are this high, especially at night, not just the daytime. Our daytime temperatures aren't that high. If you think about it, I mean, we're going to have high daytime temperatures today. We're going to have 96 degrees. I mean, that's nothing for someplace in North Alabama. That's nothing for someplace. And they have those temperatures all the time. We rarely have temperatures that high during the day, but boy, we have really high night temperatures, and that's what makes the difference. It makes a difference in how plants function, and it's a good thing to know. A lot of plants have just quit flowering. It's really interesting. They just quit flowering because the heat, they can't deal with those high night temperatures. So how do we make use of this? How do we understand how to deal with this? Let's talk about that real quickly because okra. Can I just say the big word? Okra knows how to deal with this. Okra does just fine. Peas, man, they are doing just fine. Southern peas, not green peas, southern peas. Man, they're producing like crazy, the okra and the peas. Eggplants, they do pretty good. Peppers is very interesting. You know, there's a lot of different kinds of peppers out there. What's interesting to me is that the peppers that we get from Mexico, which are used to they grew up in cool night temperatures because Mexico's Mexico. They're not doing so well. But the peppers I'm getting from the Caribbean, the peppers that grew up in the Caribbean and from South America in the really humid parts of South, man, they are just, you wouldn't believe how many peppers I'm pulling off right now. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And there's some great flowers that are producing right now too. It's interesting to think about that. It's good to know that. It's these night temperatures right now that can really be a problem. The good thing is about the end of August, about the end of September, things are going to start changing. And that's the other theme of this program today is we got to start thinking about, you know, August, if you don't mind me saying, August is the beginning of fall on the Gulf Coast. And if you aren't ready for it, if you can't in the middle of these hot nights, if you can't envision, if you can't just sit in your chair and just think, what is fall going to be like? What's fall going to be like? Am I going to be ready for fall? If you can't do that, you got a problem. Because you're not going to be ready when fall gets here. August is the beginning of fall. It's when gardeners have to get ready. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. We have a week. We got 10 days. About 10 days is about right. Yeah, maybe not quite 10 days. Before we really have to begin planting the seeds of fall. It's very important. All kinds of flowers, all kinds of vegetables. That are going to be doing really nicely. And they're going to do nice because here's what's going to happen. The temperature is going to drop. It won't happen every day, but by the end of August, there's going to be 2, 3, 4 days at a spell when temperatures are in the around 70. Maybe we might even see some temperatures in the 60s. And you know what's going to happen as soon as that happens? Ooh. If your tomatoes survive, and there are only a very few do, we're going to talk about some that do. They're going to start producing again. The butter beans are going to start producing again on the pole. The pole butter beans are finally going to start producing really well. You're going to see so many eggplants and other things that you won't know what to do with them. Just because those night temperatures drop, it's going to happen more and more in September. And by October, the night temperatures are going to be down. It's going to be time to be picking collards. Ooh, and mustard greens and turnips and radishes. And getting our broccoli ready to pick in November and December, so many things to do. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We understand these things down here on the coast. The rest of the world will have to be understanding these things as time goes on. They have no idea, do they? They just have no idea what it's like to have these high night temperatures. But they're going to all have to deal with it soon, too. We're seeing more high night temperatures in many places. We've got a lot to learn about it. We actually have a lot to teach. That's also very interesting. Ever thought about what Mobile can teach the rest of the world? If we understood Mobile, we'd have a lot to teach, because the world's going to look a little bit more like Mobile in the future for a lot of reasons. Hey, give us a call this morning. I would love to know what's happening in your garden right now. Here's my challenge. If you have tomatoes and they're still producing, I want to know about it. Because if you have tomatoes and they're still producing, there's either some very unusual conditions in your yard or you got a very unusual tomato. Let's talk about that. Give me a call, 251-343-0106. Hey, you can send me pictures too. All you got to do is text them to that same number, 251-343-0106. We're going to be right back.
Attention gardeners, A. Bloom Garden Center's huge annual July sale is going on now. Mention you heard it here for more savings. That's right, just mention you heard it on FM Talk 106.5 for an additional 10% off. This is A. Bloom's largest sale every year, so visit soon for the best bargain selections. For more details, see A. Bloom Garden Center on Facebook or go to abloomgardencenter.com. A. Bloom, 116 Alverson Road in West Mobile near Schillinger and Old Shell. Open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, now closed on Sundays. A. Bloom, improving your outdoor living.
The Husqvarna Fleet Program is back at Robert Stowe Power Equipment. Husqvarna and Robert Stowe Power Equipment have teamed up to bring you the best deals on commercial zero turns of the season. Listen up, landscapers. Right now, get a Husqvarna commercial zero turn starting at $136 a month for qualified buyers and receive a blower and string trimmer for free. Do you feel like the yard work never ends? Husqvarna's robotic 450X auto mower gives you a better looking lawn with less effort. The auto mower maneuvers around your lawn without supervision, even over tricky terrain and obstacles. It knows when it needs power and directs itself back to the charging station. With convenient control options, the auto mower allows you to set it and forget it, even from your smartphone. Thanks to Husqvarna, you can have a great looking lawn and more time to enjoy it this summer. Visit Robert Stowe Power Equipment today to see how they can help with all your lawn and garden needs. Highway 59 South in Robertsdale, right at the split by the Catholic Church. Or visit them online at robertstowepower.com. Husqvarna, ready with when you are.
It's time for the 85th annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, the largest fishing tournament in the world. Hey, it kicks off with the Mossy Oak Liars Contest on Thursday, July 19th on Dolphin Island. Fishing begins at 5 Friday morning, July 20th, with the Molly Ringwalds playing that night. Hey, the rodeo site and all the musical acts are free to spectators for the weekend, and the total awards package this year valued at $500,000 in cash and prizes, with 30 categories and 4 jackpots, including Crane Works Red Snapper Jackpot. For tickets and more information, visit ADSFR.com.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, look at that. What a way to kick off the show. Get it done. Get it out of here. Okay. Listen. It's very interesting to understand temperature and understand what's happening. Actually, you know, David sent me a message and saying the unusually. I actually don't think this heat is unusual for us. I think it's been a pretty typical summer. We see this kind of heat nearly every summer, and. If anything, I mean, I think it may have actually be a little cooler than it has been in the past. We've had a number of days where it has been a little bit cooler than usual. We've had several spells where it's gotten very hot, but it's broken. And then we've had another hot spell. We got a hot spell today. It'll be broken again. This humidity, this combination of heat and humidity is part of what Gulf summer is about on the Gulf Coast. It's normal. It's normal. Sometimes when we get air masses in from certain places, they make it a little bit hotter. But this is normal for us. What's interesting is that what's normal for us is becoming normal in other places, and not in the ways that most people anticipated. So you're going to hear more about this as the world moves on, and you're going to hear they're all going to be dealing with the problems we've had to deal with. We've come up with some really interesting creative solutions to it, I hope. Not all of us have learned about them yet, but we're learning. So we may have things to teach. We may have things to teach. Hey, David, let's talk about that swale garden.
Yes, but real quickly, the humidity down here, and that doesn't happen in Las Vegas, is the reason why I can, when I go visit my aunt out there, I can get up early in the morning, and it'll be the same temperature out there in the morning time that it is here in the afternoon, but it's a much more pleasant walk in the morning time out there because there's no humidity out there.
That's right. The dew point is so much lower. You're right about that. And of course, the daytime temperatures out there are getting above 100 nearly every day. So the swing down is you're right. That's a much more accurate way to explain what happens in a lot of those places.
You told me to call in this morning and remind you to talk about more ways we can do these swell gardens that will be conducive for Delta vegetation, flowers, and other things.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So there are two kinds of wetlands. Can I talk about this real quickly because it's useful to know? There are two kinds of, broadly speaking, I like to say there are two kinds of wetlands around Mobile. And in a place that gets this much rainfall, you've got to imagine that the wetlands are kind of diverse. The one type is the pitcher plant bog type of wetland. And that is a wetland where you have carnivorous plants like pitcher plants, and you have all these orchids, and you have just – it's the greatest concentration of wildflowers probably in North America. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. 40, 50, 60 species of plants per square meter. And these kinds of wetlands are harder to reproduce for us. They used to be really widespread. Mobile, I think, a lot of Midtown Mobile was probably in one way or another a pitcher plant savanna, and it was really common. But when we destroy those areas, it's really hard to bring them back for a lot of reasons. And those are some of the neatest places, but they require a special kind of habitat, which I can tell you how to do. On the other hand, the other type of wetland we have is this floodplain wetland in the middle of the Delta. There are fewer flowers there, but some of them are very spectacular, and I love them. And they are, because that's a wetland that's associated with a big river, it's flooded all the time. These pitcher plant bogs, they never really flood. They're not along rivers or creeks. They're actually on raised areas in pine savannas. But the one in the Delta is different. It floods all the time. It's got lots of chemicals mixed in with it, natural or otherwise, but a lot of natural chemicals mixed in that these plants adapt to, and they also have to adapt to the kind of muddy, low oxygen conditions that we see in our yards, that are typical in our yards, unlike pitcher plant bogs, a slightly different thing. So it's great to look in the average yard. You can make a ditch, just a basic ditch, and have a lot of the plants from the Delta grow there because they're adapted to those kind of harsh ditch-like conditions, having to grow in that floodplain in the middle of the Tensaw Delta. And those things are iris, like the Louisiana iris. They're typical ditch plants. They love ditches. And you can see them growing in ditches wild in Louisiana, in Mississippi, in Alabama, in Florida. These are plants that actually adapt real well to those kind of conditions. The Louisiana iris, we call them Louisiana iris. Actually, they're as common in Alabama, nearly as common in South Alabama as they are in Louisiana. So they're really neat, but a lot of those have been hybridized. It's a lot of fun to work with them. There's some crinum lilies that are really beautiful, too, that are blooming right now in the Delta. They tend to bloom in June and July, and they have some – the old name was shoestring lily, I think, was because they have these very long petals. They don't have a little crown in the center of them, but they have these long petals. They're kind of neat. There's another lily that blooms in earlier in the year, in March, and I call that a Delta lily. Or a crown lily, you can call it whatever you want, but it looks like a nimbus. If you're familiar with the old paintings of the Virgin Mary and saints, they always have these radiating things coming out of their heads. That's a nimbus, and this I call that a nimbus lily because that's what it looks like, and it's really pretty too. And it blooms in March in the Delta, and it's different than the shoestring lily. So those are three types of plants that can grow very well in our gardens. To make a place for those, David, basically all you need to do is just make a spot where the water drains to. And it doesn't have to stay there all the time. It just has to stay there long enough to stay a little bit wetter. So I have places in my yard where those crinum lilies actually – I don't even have to make a swale for the crinum lilies, the shoestring lilies, and they bloom all the time all over my yard. They're really quite adaptable. You live, if I remember correctly, in West Mobile on a site where it's probably a little bit sandier, but it shouldn't be hard to make an area that holds water just a little more. I would make that area about 3 feet wide and about 10 to 15 feet long, say.
My dog's already beat you to that.
Yeah, that's what all your friends tell me. David's dog's already dug this for him. So so there it is. Make sure it's in full sun. The other thing, it doesn't hurt, and it certainly helps, to put organic matter in there. That always helps plants to have a little bit of organic matter in there. So each winter, you can just put some rotted leaves in there. It kind of helps all your plants in there. But I would start with those iris because they're going to be easy to get. Now, the other thing we had to talk about is how are you going to get these other plants like the shoestring lily, which is blooming now, and the hymenocallis. Well,
how did you know that was going to be my next question?
Well, because you asked it last week, and it's the logical question. And so the botanical gardens is a good place to get the shoestring lilies and some of the others. They often have them, not always, but often. They're getting harder to find in the trade. I have a good friend who is, for reasons that are inexplicable to me, is sometimes confused with me. It's just unbelievable to me that happens, but people believe he's me sometimes. But he's different. He's Martin van der Giesen. Martin is talking about getting back into perennial production, and these are some of the plants that we'll get him to do. Martin's out in Sims. His nursery's, he's done very well. He's survived, weathered the nursery collapse, and has done very well, and is now going to get back into perennial. So that's another way. Collecting seeds is a great way too. And if you're in the Delta and you see these little ball-like seeds hanging onto these plants that are blooming beautifully, they're pretty easy to start with seeds as well. So all of these ways are ways to do it. But I hope that at the Botanical Gardens, with any luck, Martin's going to get production up and we're going to be able to have some of these plants. Meanwhile, David, there are so many kinds of Louisiana iris and they are so much fun to play with that you could spend the rest of your life doing nothing but Louisiana iris. They're absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Last question. Yep. These conditions that I create for these irises, will they be conducive for the crown jewel of the Delta, the lotus, or not?
Yeah, so lotus. So lotus is another element of Delta. But you'll notice if you're in the Delta and you're looking at lotus, these are all great questions, David. If you're looking at the lotus are actually growing in standing water. And practically speaking, lotus have to grow in standing water. It's a little different, and the water has to stand all the time, virtually. So I grow my lotus in areas where there's permanent standing water, and you put them in a pot, a container in those areas, and they do very well there. They need lotus. All of these plants that grow in these delta-like conditions can use a little bit more fertilizer than normal. Trying to fertilize a lotus can be a little bit tricky at times, and that means you might have to practically change the soil virtually every year in a lotus, but lotus needs to be grown in standing water. So here's another way to think about these swales. I don't know that your swale is going to hold water for a long period of time. If it does, if it holds water typically for more than 7 days, you have the concern that there may be mosquitoes. So one of the things I do when I have a swale or an area that holds water for more than 7 days, I put a plastic pot that's about 3 feet wide and about 3 feet deep that has no holes in it in the bottom of that so that I can put mosquito fish in there. You see what I'm saying? And, and the mosquito fish live there all the time. And then when it rains, and they just spread out over everything else, and they eat all the mosquitoes. It's really very effective. If you had something like that in the center of your swale, a pool in the middle of your swale that holds water all the time, doesn't have to be very big, maybe a little bigger, maybe 4 feet by 5 feet, a little bit of depth, you can put your lotus in there. So you'll have, your as you say, the crowning glory, the lotus in the middle of your swale garden.
Can I get some lotus seeds from you since you grow them?
I will try to get some lotus seeds this fall, and we can distribute those, and we'll see about that. You know, it is very – I've known lots of people who try to dig lotus from the Delta. It is very hard to do. Let me tell you about – it's relatively easy to get lotus, however. And you can begin to experiment with the different kinds of lotus. I recommend the native lotus. It seems to have fewer disease problems. It seems to adjust very well. The yellow lotus, sometimes sold as chonkapin, but the yellow lotus, our native lotus, is probably the best one for us. There are actually lots of places where you can go on the internet and buy lotus. Several water gardens carry lotus. So look for the yellow lotus, and that's something you can have. Don't buy it before you get your place ready for it, because it's going to need a place to go into immediately. It's going to be a little quicker than me getting you seeds. The seeds are going to take a while. Digging plants from the Delta, lotus from the Delta, is quite a challenge. You will probably be sucked under before you dig it up. They have roots way, way down. And those alligators are going to look at you like, what is that boy doing?
Yeah, and me and alligators have a deal. I don't go where they're at, and they don't go where I'm at.
Yeah, so. Well, you'll probably survive the alligators. You may not survive being sucked down into the mud, however, which is quite a thing.
All right. Have a good one, Bill.
All right, David, that was great. Thank you.
This information update brought to you by Truett Insurance and Bonding in Daphne. When you need home, auto, or business insurance, do it with Truett. Call 625-2600 or visit our website, truettinsurance.com. Do it with Truett.
FM Talk 1065, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority, and Dr. Bill Williams.
We'll expect mostly sunny skies today with isolated thunderstorms. We'll be hot with temperatures in the mid-90s. Tonight, isolated thunderstorms, lows in the mid-70s. And for Monday, mostly sunny again with a few afternoon thunderstorms and highs in the mid-90s. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams for FM Talk 1065.
FM Talk 1065, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority.
Celebrate your independence during the month of July with a Liberty Safe during Mike Ward's Scratch and Dent Truckload Sale, now going on. Save hundreds on slightly blemished Liberty Safes with a lifetime replaceable warranty and a fire or attempted break-in. Best of all, have your Liberty Safe delivered up to 50 miles ground floor at no extra charge. Financing for 12 months at 0% interest is available with approved credit. Just look for the giant Liberty Safe at exit 5B, I-65 in Moffitt and Mobile. Call 471-1137.
This is Chris Francis, board-certified master arborist at Chris Francis Tree Care. Trees are such a valuable part of your property. Want to know how to keep pest problems away from your trees? Start by keeping them healthy, making sure they're growing in a favorable environment, providing the proper nutrients, and maintaining the appropriate pH. Meanwhile, certain pests attack perfectly healthy plants. Timely applications of oils, soaps, insecticides, fungicides, and fertilizers will significantly improve survivability. But the key is having knowledgeable experts making regular site visits to catch or prevent problems before they occur, all while protecting the pollinators and beneficials. Does this sound overwhelming? Let our plant health care professionals do it for you. Call 4TREE, that's F-O-R-T-R-E-E. Chris Francis Tree Care. Online, chrisfrancistreecare.com, or find us on Facebook. Or call 367-8733, 251-4TREE.
Fighting the socialists in Washington, exposing the nonsense in Congress, restoring common sense to government. It's Common Sense Radio Town Hall with your host, Pete Rehm. We the people must take a stand.
Please join me, Pete Rehm, 8 p.m. every Thursday night for the Restoring Common Sense Town Hall. Presented by The Call News, delivering news and sports for Mobile County. We'll turn up your voice. That's Common Sense Town Hall, presented by The Call News, every Thursday at 8 p.m. on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. Listen to that. Listen. Can you hear it? That's the wood thrush. If we were out in the woods right now, you know, not the kind of disturbed woods that we have now, but if we were up in the Red Hills, in an old oak forest, or if we were up in Monroe County in an oak forest, or maybe in North Baldwin County along the slopes, along the delta, we might hear that old wood thrush right now. He'd be singing in the woods. Listen to that song. That's better than any bump music we got. You know, I think we're going to include some bird songs in our bump music. I know that's just as crazy as it can be, but that's the way we work here. We are a little crazy because we're talking about things that other people don't get to talk about. We get to talk about where we are and what it's like here. Hey, that was the old wood thrush. You remember that song? What a nice song to have. What a nice song to remember. Wood thrush, they're not as common as they used to be, but I love that sound. I love that sound. Hey, Rusty. So Rusty sent me a picture of two eggplants, a tale of two eggplants here. He's got some purple eggplants that look like maybe Millionaire or some of the other Japanese eggplants that look doing pretty well. And then he sent me a picture of some white eggplants that have these brown depressed spots in them. And he said, is this related to the heat? Well, sort of. I think it's more related to the moisture and partly related to the heat, but not really. It's not really about high temperatures. It's really about the moisture. It's really about the humidity, I think. I think that's phimosis, which is a disease. I'm gonna guess that it's probably phimosis. It's a disease that can affect eggplants. It begins as a sort of a little rotten, depressed area, and it sinks like that, and then what you're left with are the scars. What's interesting is, or maybe not interesting, but useful to know, is that you have one eggplant that shows no signs of it, and the other one that does. And what we know is that some types of eggplants are more susceptible to these kinds of rots. On the fruit rots, like phimosis, than others. And the white eggplant looks to me to be pretty susceptible. I don't know the varieties that are highly susceptible, but I've seen it on some varieties. A lot of the commercial varieties that we grow, like Florida Market, I know they're not susceptible to phimosis, but I think this one, and maybe that's Casper. Is it Casper, Rusty? It'd be interesting to know. That one is susceptible. Is it susceptible because it's white? I don't know. But Rusty sent me two pictures of eggplants. One has this disease, this ugly disease called phimosis. It actually won't hurt. You can still eat those eggplants. They're just not as pretty as they used to be. So there it is. Hey, so Tony asking, can we trim our live oaks now? You know, I don't know that there's not a time you can't trim live oaks as long as we don't have oak wilt. But folks, it's coming. And it will, given how messy we are, given that we're the messy people we are, I almost guarantee you we're going to introduce it. And boy, is that going to be a shock to your system when you see what oak wilt does to live oaks. And we're making the worst case possible because we've got water oaks all around town that are going to be highly susceptible to it. They're going to serve as vectors, and they're going to make sure that the live oaks get it. There are some ways we could fix that. There are ways we could prevent it, but being the messy people we are, we don't think about things until they've already affected us. What a digression. Tony, you can trim them anytime right now. That's fine. Don't take off big pieces, though. This is a problem all throughout the year. The bigger the wound you leave, it doesn't matter when you do it in our climate. It doesn't matter. But the bigger the wound you leave, the more chances you make that it doesn't heal over very well and you get rot and other problems. If Chris Francis is listening, he's going to jump in and say, yep, you got to do it right. And Chris can Francis can add comments to that. I would see no problem in pruning a live oak now, as long as you don't prune big branches. Just don't prune the big branches. Try to keep it to smaller branches. And usually you can accomplish what you need to do by using smaller branches. Because if you want to raise the branch, if you want to raise the limbs, for example, all you got to do is take weight off the tips, and you can do that by taking off small branches, branches that are the size of your thumb. Because that's where the weight is, and you just take it off, and that branch just lifts magically in the air because you've taken the weight off. So there it is. Yeah, you can trim them now. Some people are sending me pictures of tomatoes. I am looking at one that is the pictures I'm getting mostly, though not entirely, are tomatoes that are cherry tomatoes. Let's see, Sean, if you can tell me what type of cherry tomatoes those are. It looks like one of the gold hybrids, one of the ones that we recommend that come from the botanical gardens. They've done very, very well. And I've got some other pictures. Ooh, lots of pictures of tomatoes and cukes. Again, mostly cherry tomatoes doing very well. The cherries tend to last a lot longer. Bernie sent me some pictures of tomatoes. They don't look like cherry tomatoes. They're still, he's got one cherry tomato that's doing very well. And one larger tomato that's doing okay. Hey, Bernie, tell me what your larger tomato is. Just send me a note. And Bernie, one other thing. Tell me where you are. Tell me where you are. It can make a big difference if you're a little bit away from the coast. That can help us a little bit to understand that, too. Have some questions about bamboo. I'm coming back. Tony, you got a lot of questions this morning. That's okay. I'm coming back. Pierce, let's talk about what you need.
Hey, I planted some squash earlier this year, and I believe you mentioned root, some kind of root bug or something got to it. Is it too late to plant squash now? And if it isn't, what type?
Yeah, okay. So squash vine borer, and it's a borer,
yep,
which apparently I have a hard time saying articulately, borer. That's got two R's in it with an E in between them.
Well, me too.
Yeah. Squash vine borer is the problem. And what it does is it bores into the stem of that squash above the ground part, and just the whole plant wilts. And we have squash vine borers in huge numbers. And they start early, and it's just a real problem for zucchini and conventional squash. There is a type of squash, as I like to tell people, that does very well here. And it's actually an old squash from the Caribbean and the Gulf Coast. It's the kind of squash, it's in the same family of squash that we get what's the name of that winter squash that people like so much? I'll think of it in a minute. But it's from a family of squash that tends to produce winter squash, but there's some great summer squashes that are produced too. The Koreans and the Italians figured this out a long time ago, and it's a big vining squash. It does great. I think that it's probably not too late to plant them. I would say this would be the very last date. You could plant them, and there are two places I can tell you to get those seeds. If you want to try the Italian squash, it's known as tromboncino, like a trombone. With a tromboncino, so it's okay. Like tromboncino. So
are they readily available at different places? Or
yes, you're not going to find them at Lowe's. You're not going to find them at Home Depot. I keep telling Charlie that he doesn't believe me, but you're not going to find them there. You may not find them at any places locally because we don't have a lot of good seed sources locally. But you can find them on the internet at a lot of places that sell seeds, and look for tromboncino. Or another name for it is you'll see it sold as rampicante, R-A-M-P-I-C-A-N-T-E, I think. But tromboncino should get you there. That's the Italian version. It's very nice. You pick these squash when they're young. They get to be the size of trombones if you let them go, but you pick them when they're young. They're quite good. The one that I actually prefer, and I don't mean to suggest that tromboncino isn't a great squash. It's a great squash. But for a couple of reasons, I actually prefer Korean ball squash. And there are several places to get the Korean ball squash. I know it sounds like it comes from Korea. Actually, it comes from the United States. Isn't that weird? But they developed the squash, and they're the only one selling it now. It's a Korean ball squash. There are several of these Korean ball squash that are quite delicious. And there's a place called Kitazawa Seeds.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah. Oh, boy. All these mouthfuls of words. Kitazawa. It's a Japanese word. K-I. Charlie's asking, can he stretch the show? And yes, he's going to stretch it a lot because it's going to take me 15 minutes to spell this word.
No, where can I get those?
Kitazawa. Kitazawa Seeds. Look up on the internet. Write this down. Write it down because it's hard to spell.
Kitazawa.
K-I-T-I-Z-A-W-A.
Okay.
Get it? Kitazawa.
But now, if I order them and if they don't come in for, say, a week or two.
You're okay. Go ahead and plant them. I think you're better planting them.
My eggplant, my peppers, my okra, yep. Everything is going like crazy good.
Yep.
The squash crapped out.
Yeah, I guess. Can we say that on the air
now? That's
why I'm calling. No,
you can't say that. So, I know what you're saying. So it does that for everybody, and it's just this yellow squash. And here's the reason why. The yellow squash and the zucchini have hollow stems. And so when the squash vine borer gets in there, he just runs up and down that stem, eating it out, and there's nothing you can do. The squashes that I'm recommending to you, this Korean ball squash from Kitazawa, or the Italian squash, which you can get from several places,
I got you.
Tromboncino, they have solid stems, so when it bores in there, he can't do anything, and they're just very resistant to it.
I got you.
So did you write all this down while you're driving?
Yeah, well, I'm actually, my son is driving, and he has a memory like a...
All right, good.
So we got that covered, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, all right, good to hear from you. call me back if you've got any problems with that. Kitazawa Seeds, a great place, and several places, Territorial Seeds, a bunch of places have the tromboncino. So look them both up on the internet.
Well, thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
Attention Mobile, announcing a one-day sale Saturday, August 4th of the best Mobile Bay waterfront opportunities in a decade. The final phase of a successful Mobile Bay community just 10 minutes from downtown stalled during the recession. It's time to sell at below the market prices. Saturday, August 4th only, $10,000 off all dockable waterfront home sites with direct access to Mobile Bay and the Gulf of Mexico. $5,000 off all water access home sites with free covered boat slips. Some examples, direct bay access with covered boat slips was $19,900, now $14,900. 2 acres dockable waterfront with covered boat slips was $44,900, now $34,900. Buy on Mobile Bay in a prime location with spectacular boating and fishing for 50 cents on the dollar or less. Direct bay access, $14,900. Dockable waterfront, $34,900. Call or click 877-BIG-VIEW.com for an early appointment. That's 877-BIG-VIEW, 877-244-8439.
We all know someone who believes their plants are more than, well, just plants. They feed, water them, they talk to them, even name them.
Perk up, Fred. Fred, wake up.
People who love their plants just seem to get a certain something from helping them grow. Non-plant people don't really understand, but Cecil Christenberry and all the folks at Old Time Feed in Fairhope understand your plants and your lawn and have the expertise you need to keep your plants thriving. Old Time Feed has been in the nursery, feed, and seed business since man landed on the moon. So buy the highest quality plants and get the best advice to make sure you start off with healthy specimens that will brighten up your home and your yard that will thrive in our coastal climate from Old Time Feed. For homeowners, contractors, and yeah, even supplies for home chicken coops, Old Time Feed in Fairhope at Highway 98 and Greeno Road.
Hi, this is Gordon Deal. Coming up on This Weekend, if you haven't heard enough about the dangers of summer, wait to hear the newest things we're being warned about, like watermelon seeds. Also, what one bank CEO is doing to liven up his place of work, plus the man who's traveled to every country on the planet, and the men who obsess over cutting their grass, sometimes three times a week. That and more coming up on This Weekend. This Weekend with Gordon Deal, Sunday afternoons at 1 on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain, rain on my face. Yeah, coming back with good information here. From lots of people. Polecat, Barbara Pleasant, is my is my cousin by marriage, who writes a garden column. Her family is from Mobile. Barbara grew up in Mobile. She decided that she liked cooler climes, and she lives in a cooler climate. But Polecat has sent me a great picture that Barbara Pleasant took, and I don't know when, it's probably been a while, when she was in Alabama, of Charles Wilbur, who set the world record for the most tomatoes per plant and the tallest tomato plant. Really quite impressive. I suspect that wasn't in Mobile, probably a little bit north of Mobile somewhere. But Barbara used to live in Mobile. Wrote a lot about it. Sean is sending me pictures of sending me pictures of his tomatoes still producing, and we got some good information. As I suspected, the little tomatoes that are producing great are Sun Gold, which has done very well for us. It's really great. Really, for some reason, it produces right through the heat, along with Coyote and Mexican, the Mexico Midget tomato, which is a beautiful, delicious tomato, just unbelievably delicious flavor. And it produces right through this heat. All of them are really big tomatoes. They just grow and grow and grow. The gold tomato is probably, the Sun Gold is probably the least of the big growers, but it is still a big grower. What I would love to know is he sent me a note saying that the large tomato that was doing well was an heirloom tomato. That doesn't mean a whole lot because there's so many kinds. So tell me what kind of heirloom tomato, if you know, or where you got the seeds. It would be interesting to know. And I'll be interested to see if it keeps producing. It's useful to know. Big tomatoes have a hard time in our climate, and for a lot of reasons. I will tell you, the stink bugs in my yard will have eaten those big tomatoes up. Other yards may not have such a problem with stink bugs, but stink bugs can be a big problem when it comes to growing big tomatoes, because they just do a number on them. Tony in Fowl River asked me a lot of questions this morning, and that's okay. And I'm getting to all of them. So he says, there's at Bellengrath near the home is a patch of bamboo. Well, there's a lot of bamboo at Bellengrath, a lot of different kinds. And one of the things that Bellengrath did early on was to just experiment with different kinds of bamboo. And some of those experiments, they might have wished they hadn't experimented with, though they're very interesting. They're very interesting. One of them is the classic Phyllostachys, is the classic Chinese bamboo that is Phyllostachys edulis. It's a very delicious mozo bamboo. MOSO is sort of the common name. And it's the big bamboo that grows, that's the spreading bamboo. It spreads over a large area. It's very beautiful, but boy, does it spread. It takes a long time to get it established, and when you do, it spreads. There's another Phyllostachys there, too, that's spreading. So there's several kinds of spreading bamboos. You'll also notice that there are around Bellingrath, when you're there, if you look carefully, there are clumping bamboos that have been there forever. They are bamboos that don't spread in that big kind of broad way. They kind of make clumps, and they've been there for, they've probably been there since the 40s and 50s. They're probably 70 years old now, maybe older. And you'll notice that they're still in clumps. They don't spread outside of those clumps, and those clumps may thicken up and get pretty thick. It's actually good to thin them out every now and then. They look better. But they stay in clumps that spread 10, 15 feet wide, maybe 20 feet wide in some cases. And those are all Bambusa bamboos, B-A-M-B-U-S-A. And they have a lot of different names. There are several kinds of Bambusa bamboos. But so, Tony, you got to tell me which one it is. Is it the spreading ones? Is it the clumping ones? There it is. I would be very cautious about putting the spreading ones in your yard. It can be very difficult. Homestead tomato. Homestead is a name. That's interesting that Homestead is classified as an heirloom. Homestead is it actually a tomato, if I'm not mistaken, that was developed for the Florida commercial market. And it's an older variety of Florida commercial variety. Homestead, probably better tasting than some of the modern tomatoes developed for commercial production, but Homestead, and it makes sense that it would do a little better. I have not tried Homestead, but maybe it's going to be a good one to try. I'm getting a little more information from Bernie. I'm going to review that here in just a minute, but I better get to Carol before I run out of time. Carol, I'm listening. What's up?
Hi, Dr. Bill. I got a source for the shiitake mushrooms.
Oh, good.
And I've got a lot of information, but I hope we can do this kind of like an experiment.
Yes.
But this, of course, it's up to you. I talked to a horticulturist, the horticulturist from the company, and I'm not telling you which one it is yet.
Yeah.
I told him we were in zone 9. He said, yes, they would grow here, but it was way, way too hot. Wait until November to start them because they have to come on a truck and the heat will kill the spores.
Isn't that interesting? So, that's an interesting thing. So that could be an interesting problem, and I hadn't really thought about that. Isn't that useful to know?
Well, I'm not finished.
Yeah.
The spores come in something called a plug, and get 100 plugs, and he told me different trees, but of course you're here and Chris Francis is here. And I have a live oak and pecan, but I'll give you the whole other selection of trees, and maybe that's the one thing we can change.
Right.
This is the wonderful news. If we do this right, they will produce for 10 years,
year-round. Well, there's a caveat to that, and that is how fast does the wood rot? And so Carol, I'm getting this signal that I have to go. But can you hold on, because this is really good. Can you talk about this after the news? Yeah, let's come back and deal with this, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
My old hand is a good old hand. She lays eggs for the railroad man. Sometimes one, sometimes 10. That's enough.